Hello and welcome to the VersaGroup analyst call. Throughout the call, all participants will be in listen-only mode, and afterwards there will be a question and answer session. Just to remind you, this conference call is being recorded. Today, I am pleased to present Matthew Gregory, VersaGroup Chief Executive, and Ryan Mangold, VersaGroup Chief Financial Officer. Please go ahead with your meeting.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone, and thank you very much for joining us on this conference call to review the DfT's decision to award the West Coast Partnership to our joint venture with Trenitalia. I'm joined on the call today by Ryan Mangold, our new CFO, as well as a number of my VersaGroup colleagues, and we'll be talking to the summary slides that can be found in the reports and presentation section of our investor website before we open up to any questions you may have. I'll try and refer to the page numbers as we go through, and we'll try and make it obvious which parts that we're talking about. So starting off with page two, let me open up clearly by saying that we're very pleased with today's news. This is a unique and fundamentally different franchise and gives us the opportunity to run one of the largest intercity mainline operations connecting London to Glasgow, but also to be a key partner in shaping and then running HS2. This bid has been put together on a prudent basis, has stronger protection mechanisms than seen before, and with more robust margins, has a better balance between risk and reward. Now, this partnership structure is complicated, so we have put a diagram on slide three. So let me start by emphasizing that this will be in two phases. Phase one is where we will run the existing West Coast mainline, delivering improvements to passengers that I'll talk about in a second. And also in phase one, we'll be concurrently working as what's called the shadow operator, providing consultancy services to design, develop, and mobilize all aspects of the HS2 service offering. Phase one is scheduled to run until March 2026. And on the completion of HS2, we will move into the second phase, where we'll be the integrated operator of both HS2 and also the reshaped West Coast mainline until 2031. This second phase will be a management contract where we will not be on revenue or cost risk. So let's go into a little bit more detail into the two phases. So moving on to page four. For the first phase, the existing operation is very similar to what you're used to. I'm sure you know the details of the existing franchise, and we've laid that out for you there. We've given you the map just to remind people which operation we're talking about. This is a very large and important operation, with the vast majority of travel being focused on the leisure and business traveller, with far fewer commuters than some of our other franchises. The growth rates are robust and the recent performance has been maintained. So let's move on to what we're going to deliver to passengers, and I'll talk about this on page five. You can see on slide five that we will be delivering a variety of improvements. The fleet will be totally refurbished with 25,000 brand new comfortable seats, reliable and free Wi-Fi, at seat power for all customers, and improved onboard catering and infotainment. We'll be working to simplify fares, promote the use of mobile tickets and smart cards, as well as introducing delay repay at 15 minutes from the start of the franchise. We'll have 260 new services each week by 2022, increasing seat miles by 10%. There'll be further station upgrades, car park increases, as well as better accessibility features. And we'll have 10 new electric trains to enable us to deliver two trains an hour all day from London, from Liverpool to London, and new bi-mode trains for North Wales. And finally, we'll increase training to 50,000 days to include accessibility awareness training, plus community investment funds and customer panels. Also in the first phase, we will perform a shadow operator role, which we talk about on page six, creating 100 new jobs to design, develop, and mobilize all requirements to operate HS2 at the point that it's been constructed. This will require us to be a partner to the DfT, HS2, as well as other industry stakeholders to work through all the necessary operations for HS2. And by this, we would mean agreeing timetables, agreeing fares, the operational performance, for example, with the DfT. Moving on to page seven, In the second phase, we will run the integrated operations for HS2 and the reshaped West Coast Partnership route under a management contract, where we will not be on revenue or cost risk, receiving a management fee plus incentive payments. So as you can see, this is a very different proposal to the more traditional model. Now, Ryan's going to take you through the franchise process and key terms. So let me hand over to Ryan.
Thank you, Matthew, and good morning to everybody. As Matthew notes, we are very pleased with First Trenitalia being selected to run the West Coast Partnership, and this franchise will be one of the largest franchises that we operate. Having joined the group earlier in the summer, I've spent a substantial part of my time getting to grips with the terms and financial implications of this important contract. Based on this review, I'm confident that the financial offering for West Coast Partnership is attractive and provides the group with a far better risk-reward balance than the past two franchises that we have been awarded in a range of scenarios. Turning to page 8, the key terms of phase 1 are set out here, and I'll pick out the key highlights. The current franchise has revenues of approximately $1.25 billion in the financial year 2018-19, and we expect this to grow at mid-single-digit rates over the course of the first phase, principally driven by economic fundamentals of RPI and GDP, and with bid margins at the upper end of the recent industry ranges of 0 to 4%. Despite the higher bid margins, our total contingent capital commitment for Phase 1 up to 2026 is $106 million before the season ticket bond of $7 million. This contingent capital reduces to $46 million after 2026 when we enter into the management contract in Phase 2 on introduction of HS2 to 2031 and beyond if there's a further up to 3-year extension requested by the Department for Transport. For the initial phase of the franchise up to 2026, the franchise has additional revenue protection in a GDP modifier from the start and a forecast revenue mechanism, the FRM, from April 21 of the franchise that allows for protection should the financial landscape in future be different to the assumptions submitted in the bid model. These adjustment mechanisms have been included to ensure that both the DFT and our requirements are achieved over the franchise first phase term, where there is both cost and revenue risk on First Trenitalia. If these mechanisms were in place for our Southwestern Railway and TransPennine Express franchises, we believe that both these franchises would have been profitable and no onerous contract would have been recognized on either of these franchises, further reinforcing our view on the financial merits of this franchise. The shadow operator role also takes place during the first phase, where we are assisting and facilitating the design for HS2. This element of the franchise should contribute only marginally to the profit performance. However, this is with no risk. The shadow operator will also be staffed by members of our bid team, amongst others. The total investment for the franchise is circa $716 million, and as you are aware, this is almost entirely covered within the franchise, with only £11 million being funded directly by First Trenitalia over the next 3 years, of which £7 million is expected to be returned on residual value at the end of Phase 1 in 2026. On page 9, we have shown how the GDP adjustment mechanism works. Payments or receipts are made if GDP is different to the target index by more than 2 percentage points. Payments are calculated at 90% of the GDP impact on all the DFT's baseline passenger revenue, subject to an elasticity factor of 0.82. The new FRM mechanism is summarized on page 10 and applies to where total revenue is plus or minus 4% from the bid revenue. And if revenue is below this level, DFT pays 80% of the revenue outside the band. And if revenue is above this level, First Trenitalia pays 80% of revenue outside the band. In the period where the FRM applies, this caps our profit margin to a maximum of 3.3% based on the profit share that applies in this scenario. The downside FRM is subject to an annual election for when it applies. This new mechanism is a significant improvement in terms of providing downside protection compared with other recent awards. Moving to phase 2 of the franchise from 2026 to 2031 on page 11, the DFT will be responsible for costs and revenue risk in relation to the operation of the current West Coast services and the new HS2 services. At this point of the franchise, reverts to an RPI-adjusted management fee with performance incentive fees, and hence this phase reduces to a lower effective margin, reflecting the lower risk. Note that there is potential for a further three-year extension at DfT's request from 2031, and the Phase 1 core franchise could also be extended if HS2 is delayed, with revenues and selected cost reset mechanism reflecting specified actual costs and revenues in the years 2024-2025. On page 12, as I indicated, we and Trenitalia have been very focused on modeling the potential financial performance of the contract under a broad range of scenarios and uncertainties as part of our focus on validating our assumptions. We've considered the pension risk along with our advisors and submitted the bid on the basis that we feel provides First Trenitalia with the right balance of risk protection for this potential exposure. As a reminder too, revenue and cost risk passes to the DfT after Phase 1 completes, and the franchise moves into a management contract, and there is no ongoing liability for pension payments after the end of the franchise Phase 1. The main purpose of page 13 is to remind you of the rationale and key terms of our 70-30 agreement with Trenitalia, as well as how we will present the West Coast Partnership in our accounts. We will consolidate 100% of the franchise partnerships with a minority interest of 30% flowing to Trenitalia in our group accounts. On page 14, I've brought together the key financial messages, which we believe makes this a fundamentally more robust opportunity than previous contracts, particularly the diversity of profit streams and the more modest revenue growth expectations and robust margins during the revenue risk phase, supported by the new FRM and GDP mechanism. With a franchise start in December, we will see a part-year contribution to our full-year 20 profits at around low double digits, and it is expected to be cash flow positive from the beginning. The award of this franchise completes our rail stable, with no new franchises being pursued given the scale of the rail operations, and the bid team will be moved into mobilization, shadow operator and operations mode, resulting in an overall overhead savings for the rail business. Finally, we don't believe that the addition of the West Coast franchise will have an impact to our credit ratings that remain a BBB- and stable outlook. I now hand back to Matthew for final concluding remarks.
Thanks, Ryan. So we'll now enter the usual 10-day standstill period and CMA review, but in the meantime, we'll continue our work with Trenitalia on preparations. So let me conclude by saying that First Group and Trenitalia believe that this is a unique contract and it has an appropriate balance of risk and reward for shareholders, befitting the distinctive nature of the work required to make a success of the West Coast Mainline and the HS2 project in the coming years. And from a First Group perspective, I can confirm that with this new franchise, our rail division has a strong position in the market and as such will not be bidding for any additional rail franchises for the foreseeable future, other than the continuation of our discussions on a further direct award for Great Western. Our focus will be to deliver this franchise successfully and also deliver shareholder value from the strengthened portfolio that we now have. So thanks for listening to all of that, and I'll now hand over to any questions that you may have.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. If you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad, and if you wish to withdraw your question, you may do so by pressing 02 to cancel. There will be a brief pause while questions are being registered. Okay, and our first question comes from the line of Gerald Koo from Liberum. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Morning, everyone. I was just a question on pensions. Just looking at the slide on bid de-risking, slide number 12. Just wondering what exactly you meant by the final bullet points about pensions risk being part of the overall downside risk cap. And maybe you could elaborate on what you've actually assumed happens to the cash contributions for pensions through the life of Phase 1, please.
Yeah, well, let me answer that one, Gerald. Good morning. So the main point of the conversation around pensions is quite a difficult conversation. There's clearly quite a lot of discussion going on, and there's obviously legal cases going on at the moment. So I need to be very careful about what I say here. But what we're trying to point out to people in a very factual way is that despite some of the narrative around pensions, is that the risk around pensions is not additive to the overall risk on any franchise. And in fact, the franchises, the language in the contracts has not changed. And that's been sort of set out by the DfT in their select committee responses. So we're just trying to highlight to people that whilst there's a lot of talk about pensions, the risks that everybody in the rail industry has sort of undertakes with pensions has not changed, and that it sort of is part of the overall contingent liability and is not additive to that. We're making a clear point again about the fact there's no change to the contractual obligations, and that the TOC is liable for contributions and deficit reduction payments during the life of the franchises. For this one, it's just phase one, but no ongoing liability. In terms of the assumptions we've made, look, we have done a lot of work. We understand the situation. We are involved in all of the conversations around pensions, the RDG, the pension regulator, all of that, and we have looked at all those information. We've had a great deal of external advice, and we have priced that into our bid. I'm not going to go and sort of talk about specifically what we put into the bid, but we have done a lot of work to make sure that we understand the risks, and that we have priced that accordingly.
And just to further that point, Matthew, the DfT has also taken some responsibility for risk based on the 2019 valuation that is still in the process of being finalised.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Joe Thomas from HSBC. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Morning. Could you just give a sense, please, of the profile the profile and quantum of the premium payments that you are going to be making? I mean, are there any sort of years where there's a big step up, for example, and that you need to take some to accelerate revenue growth? That would be the first question. Second thing is interested in what you were saying, and perhaps you could just draw it out a little bit more about profit margins being capped at 3.3% in an FRM support year. Does that mean that from 2021 margins are capped at 3.3%? I wasn't entirely clear why that would be the case. And then the final thing, and this is obviously relevant to the FRM and to the GDP risk sharing mechanism, is what actually are the GDP assumptions that are in the bid?
Okay, well, I'll hand all of those technical questions over to Ryan.
Okay, I mean, there's no significant changes in the quantum and the profile of the premium. It just escalates generally with the path of revenue growth assumptions. And just as a reminder, the revenue growth assumption is just mid-single digits and principally driven by GDP and RPI. So to the extent that those numbers are materially different, then the premium would be different too. On the operating under the FRM mechanism, clearly if there's this risk sharing with the DfT at this point, what that effectively means is that our table of profit sharing shifts downwards, which therefore means that our maximum margin, should FRM be applying, and it's only for the period that FRM applies, which is an annual election, will be capped at 3.3%. So if there's that level of risk sharing, the maximum margin that we can make under the FRM is at 3.3%.
Oh, so just to be clear on that, so it's only actually if you fall into a level of revenue where you need to make use of the FRM, rather than being years in which you could theoretically be captured by FRM.
Exactly right. In other words, it's a forecast revenue mechanism. We need to make an election ahead of the year that the FRM is going to apply. And where we make that election, the maximum margin that we can achieve is 3.3%.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Joe, in ordinary course, which is, you know, obviously how we believe this is going to go forward, the profit share threshold starts at 7.5% margin. So relatively high sort of threshold before profit share even kicks in on this franchise in the ordinary course.
And the final question I think that you had there was on GDP assumptions and RPI assumptions. They are from the OBR, March 2018.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And our next question comes from the line of Guy Kelly from Allianz Global Investors. Please go ahead. Your line is now open.
Hi, thanks. I just wanted to ask a couple of questions. Firstly, can you give us some sense of what assumptions you're making for the operating cost growth of the railway through phase one, just so we can compare that to the revenue growth? And then the second question is, are you able to give us a sense of what the capitalized lease liabilities for the rolling stock will be, and whether you have to capitalize anything in phase two? Thanks.
Great. Well, again, I'll pass that over to Ryan to deal with those questions. Right. Thanks, Guy.
I mean, the operating cost assumptions are being escalated in line with wider forecast expectations for inflationary adjustments. You know, we haven't done anything significant or materially different to the cost other than what we've normally expected under the rail franchise that we currently operate. So they are perfectly in line with wider economic fundamental changes. So we're not expecting a disconnect to happen in the P&L as a cost of, as a change in revenue relative to a change in the cost basis. From a capitalized lease liability perspective,
So we got some feedback there on the line. Go ahead.
On a capitalized lease liability perspective and IFRS 16, clearly that this will be a contract that will be consolidated into the accounts for phase one. When we get into phase two stage, on the basis that we aren't taking any revenue or cost risks and it's just purely on a management fee basis, it's unlikely that that will still be consolidated into the accounts. But clearly we're going to have to wait and see what the accounting standards are actually saying in 2026 if there are any kind of changes. But it's our expectation at this point, it'll only be up until phase one that they will be capitalized, and it'll be around about $750 million.
Okay, thanks very much.
Thank you. And ladies and gentlemen, just to remind you that if you wish to ask a question, please press 01 on your telephone keypad. There'll be a further pause while questions are being registered. And it looks like there are no more questions registered at this time, so I'll hand the call back to you speakers for your closing comments.
Great. Well, thank you everybody for joining the call today. I'll close up by saying that, you know, we're very pleased to won this, what is a very different partnership. And thank you very much for your time this morning. Thanks a lot.
Thank you, everybody.
And this now concludes our conference call. Thank you all for attending. You may now disconnect your lines.